This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Thursday, the 10th of April. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Donald Trump has announced he will pause reciprocal tariffs for 90 days on countries that did not retaliate against his levies, but he will maintain a 10% universal tariff. The president raised tariffs on China, however, to 125%. That's after China earlier increased its levies on American goods from 34% to 84%. Before Mr. Trump's reversal, EU members approved tariffs on 21 billion euros worth of American goods. That's in response to America's 25% levies on steel and aluminium. Stocks rallied on the news. The NASDAQ was 12.2% up when markets closed on Wednesday, and the S&P 500 climbed 9.5%, the indices' largest daily gains since 2001 and 2008, respectively.
I did a 90-day pause for the people that didn't retaliate, because I told them, if you retaliate, we're going to double it. And that's what I did with China, because they did retaliate.
The message is loud and clear. In this volatile environment, it may well be worth staying below the radar. I wanted to build on Alex's BizNews briefing yesterday and bring you more insights focused on SA-US international relations, what we are doing and what we can do when it comes to our somewhat terse relationship with the United States. I've collated views from a number of different quarters, namely the ANC, Dr. Franz Kronje, Helen Ziller, Moletsi Mbeki, and Joshua Mazursky. Let's start with ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula.
Donald Trump is tormenting us every day and night. Every week he's tormenting us. A country like South Africa. He knows he's got what we need from him, and then he also wants something from us, but we might be needing him more in terms of trade relations between this country and America. And I don't hide it and try to behave like as if we don't need America. We need America for South Africa to survive in the trade and global sphere. If South Africa were to collapse, the rand becomes something else, this country becomes a rubble. Me and you, we don't have two passports. We're not going to run to UK or anywhere. We are here. We will die here in the rubble. The ANC has got the responsibility to protect South Africa's interest. And we'll do that without pleasing others with populism. We will do that for this country. We will defend South Africa's interest. We will defend South Africa's people's interest. Our people don't work. Our economy is not growing. And it is ANC's interest to make South Africa work. If the DA does not have that, it simply has this interest that at all time we must politic. Show the world that we are better off a 20% party. And then everything else it rotates around that. Everything can collapse simply because we want to showcase everyone that we are making progress. There are better things that can make you win either than undermining national interest. We are about national interest here in South Africa. We don't have, when we go up to the Cape, the Atlantic, where it meets with the Indian Ocean, that's where things collide. So we've got nowhere to run to. And South Africa must work. It is South Africa and ANC. That's what we want. South Africa first. And if we want, we have seen the stories of other countries that have turned into a rubble because of recklessness. I don't want to mention them. You can see them. We don't want this country of ours to be in that state. We've got every responsibility to protect South Africa and South Africa's interest at all cost. And that's what is important for the African National Congress. So the budget will pass, working with others. We'll negotiate, we'll engage, as we have been doing. And once we come to a common approach with the majority, we will pass the division of revenue and appropriation, and South Africa will be on its journey.
Executive Director and Chief Economist at Asaka Liga, Russell Lamberti, recently spoke to political scientist Dr. Franz Cronje, who had some very clear thoughts on this very topic. Let's dip into that conversation.
Franz, I'm going to zoom out to the international story again and go straight to the heart of this. The Trump administration, their executive order, and their more importantly, their broader focus on this country. Yeah. What's at stake? And what is this administration's red lines in your mind? And what's at stake for South Africa and perhaps even for the government and the ANC?
Well, I think there's an enormous opportunity here. I think it's a great pity that the Americans' comments on South Africa are interpreted as threats or intimidation or efforts to undermine our progress. Well, the way I read it is that it has for some time, predates Trump, and it occurred on the Democrat side of the equation as well. There's been a view that South Africa is essentially lost. It's going to fail. No, it wouldn't be said openly, but quite a long time back, I can remember giving a talk in Washington to officials, and I made this case for South Africa could grow, and a very senior, sort of, you call him an old Africa hand, said to me, it's a good effort, he said, you've made, but he said, we've seen this 50 times before. Your country will end in only one way, as he waltzed out of the room, which is quite sobering. The view now, in some quarters, is that it is completely pointless for the United States to try and form sound relations with South Africa in an environment where the country's economy grows at 1% with a 30% unemployment rate. Because inevitably that will lead to doomsday. We can now define doomsday. It will lead to that. And South Africa will be overwhelmed by poverty and desperation and populism, and the political class that takes advantage of that will be strongly allied against the West, and we'll lose it. So we're wasting our time here. The only way that South Africa becomes a viable prospect for the US to build, the West broadly, to build sound relations with, is to ensure that its economy grows very strongly. So it needs to lift its rate of fixed investment from the 15% to the 25%. Then you get the growth to the 4%. Then you create jobs at such a rate that over 20 years, South Africa's unemployment rate will fall from above 30% to around 10%, and then we'll be fine. So the pressure being applied to the country has three components to it, as I see it. One is to back off on whatever the Americans believe the South Africans are doing that are a threat to U.S. national security. This is a different concept to trading with China. That is not a threat to U.S. national security or entertaining the Russians or going to the Russian National Day or any of that. It's a very narrowly defined idea that there are certain actions that the Americans believe they have information on, where the South Africans have actively threatened the national security of the U.S. Back off on that. Shouldn't be difficult to do. The second thing is to say, look here, you can't tax our companies on arrival in SA. You can't tax capital as it or you shouldn't tax it as it leaves your economy, let alone as it tries to enter, because we cannot get in. This isn't some personal kind of jaunt of Elon Musk who feels offended that Starlink isn't in an economy that represents less than half a percentage point of global GDP. So we're going to use the influence we have to get you to back off on that. And the third step related to it is that if you dilute the importance of market value in paying compensation for expropriation, you are uninvestable. You never get your investment rate up, you're lost. And in that case, as the United States, we actually need to consider alternatives, fallback positions, and they're very interesting ones. There's Angola, which is hosting the US-Africa Chamber of Commerce meeting this year. I learned this week, very encouragingly, advancing efforts of a block of regional countries in Southern Africa, excluding South Africa, to try and strike some form of critical minerals pact with the US. South Africa is not there in that arrangement. So the demands are do those three things.
And taxing capital on entry, that's things like BEE requirements.
If you say you can invest. I mean, I see it in my advisory life a lot of companies that quietly pass South Africa by because they say it looked good, but this doesn't make for an investment case.
That's precisely what the World Bank said in the last
week. Well, exactly. The World Bank itself, which is slightly underplayed because it finds itself on the same side as Donald Trump. I don't know which of the two would be more amazed at that a moment. In a report recently saying the very same thing, that you can't tax capital on arrival and think you're going to be competitive. So these are the demands of the American. This is the crux, as I understand it. The crux of the demands that are made. These are policies that are perfectly consistent with the success of South Africa's economy. They are policies that public opinion in South Africa would be very open to entertaining. They're actually policies that are probably essential to any prospect the ANC has of securing its political dominance in a free and open South Africa that remains a unitary state.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking, out of the ordinary.
Alec Hogg spoke to Democratic Alliance Federal Council Chair Helen Ziller earlier this week and asked her opinion on US-SA relations.
President Trump is dead opposed to any race-based legislation in South Africa and any indication of the persecution of minorities. Now, we also don't think that race-based legislation is helpful in a supposedly non-racial democracy. And we also are completely opposed to discrimination and oppression on minorities. That's why we were appalled by the Constitutional Court judgment that said kill the Boer is not hate speech. Of course, it is hate speech in our opinion, and I think in most people's opinion. So those kinds of things are worrying, but we don't believe that all South Africans should be punished. And the people who are going to be the most profoundly punished are the people who are going to lose their jobs in car factories, are the people who are going to lose their jobs on the farms of the Western Cape and other places because we, for example, export lots of citrus to the United States and other agricultural products. So the workers are going to be hardest hit by these measures, and this is the tragedy for South Africa.
Yeah, BMW, 50% of their production in South Africa goes into the US market, and of course they'll be priced out of it immediately. And the numbers, I did some work on them the other day, with 23 billion rands worth of exports. So this is a very serious thing. But on the other hand, those who have got connections into Donald Trump and co say he can be a very good friend. We haven't even explored that opportunity yet. Is there anything within the Government of National Unity, we'll talk about that in a moment, which could maybe change that or turn that around so that America starts supporting us rather than punishing us?
We have to box very smart because we are not important to America. Minority rights are massively important to Donald Trump in South Africa, but our economy is of absolutely no significance in the American scheme of things. And so we should not think that we can retaliate at an economic level that'll give the USA a bloody nose. We have to box very, very smart here. And boxing smart would be, for example, not to increase tariffs to impossible levels, but to reduce tariffs, especially on products that we don't make in South Africa, to encourage many people to invest in South Africa, so that we can start making up for a lot of the trade we will lose to America. So here we've got to do some very serious calculations, no knee-jerk reactions, proper economic analysis, thinking over the long term, because that is what it'll take.
Alec also spoke to Moletsi Mbeki, chairman of the Institute of International Relations, who said that South Africa needs to fix US relations to best serve South Africa's national interest.
The two main parties at the end of the day, I mean, they are the people that matter in the government of national unity. They have to sit down and look at what is it that the Americans are interested in about South Africa, which they would like to get from South Africa. And then to sound out, you know, through the various channels, whether they are in the right directions. You know, the good thing about the United States is that it has think tanks like the Center for International and Strategic Studies, which have a lot of access to government, to the government of the United States. They should go and see these think tanks and say to them, look, what is it that this guy wants? What can we give him that he would consider to be valuable? So as I say, there are these think tanks, there are the Council on Foreign Relations, the Hudson Institute. These are all the think tanks in the United States that our diplomats should be going to and discussing with them, and delegates and people from the government of national unity, two or three people should be talking to these people. What is it that the Americans would want in exchange for continuing the duty free entrance of South African product? And on top of that, we have over 600 American companies in South Africa. They should go and see these companies and say, look, guys, what does this man want? What can we offer this guy? But you know, as you know, our government is very inept, I'm afraid. They are inept. And instead of getting on their bicycle and going around, going to see these think tanks. We have think tanks in South Africa as well. I'm chairman of the South African Institute of International Affairs. That's one of the oldest think tanks in this country on international issues. We have the Institute for Global Dialogue. I haven't seen these guys from the government of national unity going to these experts. We have powerful teams of researchers in these institutes who can advise them.
Alec been busy this week in another blockbuster interview. He spoke to Joshua Mazursky from the Hudson Institute, an American think tank based in Washington.
Now, what Moletsi Mbeki said to me this morning was that the meeting that the Government of National Unity representatives would have with you and others at think tanks would be to ask, what is it that this guy, this president in the United States, actually wants from us? Now, you've said the ICJ is one part of it. You've said that race-based legislation, especially on American companies, is another part. What else would, and you've also said that zero tariffs would also make that issue go away. Is that it? Are those the three things that would make the White House happy to normalize a relationship with South Africa, or is there more?
I think the joint military exercises off the coast with China and Russia are problematic. I think South Africa would have to elevate the level of seriousness with which they take things like farm murders. And I'm not even talking about solely white farm murders or black farmers who get murdered as well. From my understanding is that those are treated with less severity than poaching a rhino, for instance, which I don't support either, but I think humans are more important than animals. So I think they need to start treating those types of crimes with appropriate seriousness. And then, you know, with the ICJ case that I've already referenced, there's other steps that they could take with Israel, restoring diplomatic relations. Remember, South Africa withdrew its ambassador from Israel, and Israel withdrew its ambassador to avoid the ambassador being expelled, probably, is where that was headed. I think South Africa could use its good offices at the AU and stop trying to block the Israeli representative. This just happened again. So there's been several times where the Israeli representative, Israel does, you know, was granted observer status, but then South Africa and Algeria especially have been behind this campaign to keep them out of AU gatherings. So there's a number of things. It appears that they've backed off renaming Sandton Drive Leila Khaled Drive, which is very wise. There's plenty of other people they could have named it after. They need to work out the Taiwan representative office issue, where the ANC, surely at China's behest, is trying to force Taiwan out of its representative office in Pretoria to move it. That really angers people, especially in Congress. So I think they should just go through the list of grievances that the United States has that have been made very public and see what they can do to rectify them. If they can't rectify them, they need to have an open and honest conversation with the U.S. about those issues. Because again, I actually do think these are fixable. Even think about the ICJ case. That it's not a particularly popular cause among ordinary South Africans. This is very much an elite occupation or preoccupation. This is ANC elites pushing an ICJ case that is not popular, generally speaking, among the population. There's been polling on this. This is not a widely supported effort. And in fact, you hear criticisms, you would know this better than I, of people wondering why the South African government is spending many millions of dollars pursuing this ICJ case that has to do with an issue far, far from South Africa, while South Africa infrastructure is crumbling, while they have the worst murder rate outside of an active conflict zone in the world, while they have all these other challenges. So again, it's actually not a hard fix for the ANC to drop the ICJ case or walk back from it. The BEE laws, again, I understand that the history of it and et cetera, but even if they can't reform those laws, then they can, at the very least, work out some, you know, carve outs or some waivers or some exceptions here, some sort of deal on the BEE issue. Because again, from the American perspective, the other problem with BEE is that it hasn't worked. It has failed in South Africa. The only thing it has done is enriched a very small cadre of elite, usually ANC officials, but a small cadre of elites. That's the primary achievement, if you want to call it that, of the Black Economic Empowerment Laws. So these are failed laws that are morally offensive to the Trump administration. And so again, I think, you know, some sort of carve out or workaround on those would be very appropriate and really, really well received by the Trump administration. So if there can be progress, I know you can't wave a magic wand and do all these things quickly, but if there's a serious, credible effort in those directions where there's real progress made on a few things, and again, a serious, credible plan for working on the others, working with the United States, I think that would be really well received and go a long way to getting this relationship back on track.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. Thanks as always for watching. We'll be back on Monday with more context on both the global and local front.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.